Is this thing on? Word.
This is the Rookie Sports Report, hosted by Matthew Frizzell.
4 runs off the Detroit Tigers, who are the 10th worst in all of baseball.
And Logan Weber.
But this man was swallowed whole by a whale.
Presented by 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060, ESPN, The Jock.
Everybody love everybody! Come on!
Pardon me, I'm playing my imaginary piano to this great bumping music here, as always. Young, Wild, and Free instrumental. Of course, the artist Bruno Mars, Snoop Dogg. Who's the other guy in that?
Wiz Khalifa.
The instrumental of it, of course, made by the Logan Weber. Welcome to the Thursday edition of the Rookie Sports Report podcast. We're, of course, presented by ESPN, The Jock, Springfield's total sports station. And we're happy to be here on this Thursday. More than likely, just a heads up, we won't do it on Friday because yours truly will be very, very sleep deprived and in need of sleep after the events that are going to go on tonight. Of course, folks that are listening can't see it, but Logan, you can see it. I'm wearing the blue and gold of the St. Louis Blues. They're back in action tonight at the Enterprise Center in St. Louis, and yours truly will be trekking up that long, 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 long trek of I-44 up to St. Louis to watch that game, and looking forward to that. Looking at about a 2 o'clock departure time in this afternoon, probably going to be back home at around 2 a.m., tonight, or actually tomorrow morning. So looking forward to that as always, but that's neither here nor there. Just want to let you guys know, more than likely we'll not have a podcast for tomorrow because I will need some sleep because we've got big days coming up. You're doing Lamar versus Fair Grove in the Class 2 District Championship, and I'm doing a District Championship between Glendale and Lebanon as we head into the middle weeks of November. Football season is winding down, getting into the meet the best part of the playoffs coming up here in high school football, and you can't be sleep deprived. You got to be on top of your A game if you're a broadcaster, and you can't do that when you're going off of 3 to 4 hours of sleep, or at least I can't, in my opinion. Though then again, my A game is other teams, you know, or other broadcasters' C or D games, so I shouldn't say that. I'll tell you what, I'm the worst critic of myself out of everyone that I've ever been criticized of.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of people are that way. I'm the same way, too. Yeah. I am my biggest critic, without a doubt. I am so beyond hard on myself sometimes, it's ridiculous.
Though I had a former Missouri broadcaster who now does stuff for Nebraska, the college, does their women's basketball games and does stuff pre- and post-game for their football team, bless his heart. But he told me, even if you think you did bad, it was not as bad as you thought, broadcasting-wise.
Right. So.
And I feel like I do a pretty good job night in and night out. Of course, there are some games where you're just like, oh, man, I couldn't have done that any better. And then there are some games where you're just like, why do I even have a microphone in front of my face? But it comes with the job. It's just like any professional player. You have off days, you have good days, you have bad days. But just as long as you keep doing it and come back doing it, that's all that matters. All that is mattering right now is the NFL. It starts off week 10. Already week 10. Already. The NFL season starts tonight, and because we're not going to have a podcast on Friday, tomorrow, we're going to make our NFL picks right here, right now, after we just got some breaking news here just minutes ago from NFL insiders. Cam Newton, formerly of the New England Patriots and formerly of the Carolina Panthers, is back to his old stomping grounds. He has re-signed with the Carolina Panthers. He was reported to meet with the team earlier this morning, and just minutes ago, it was broken by Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter, the two best NFL insiders in the business. They announced it, I'm pretty sure, on Twitter, because everything's announced on Twitter nowadays. But anyway, that's besides the point. Cam Newton, Logan, is back with the Panthers, and it's just natural seeing Mr. Newton in the black and teal blue of the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, it just sort of feels right.
Yeah.
You know, after all the success he had in Carolina, it took him to a Super Bowl, won an MVP, had great success in Carolina. You know, injuries and some other things happened that sort of took away from that. I think really what sort of killed the Cam Newton era in Carolina was the loss of Ron Rivera, when Ron Rivera left, or that situation there, that sort of just deterred things for Cam Newton to a certain extent. But with Cam back in Carolina, I feel like sort of all is right with the world again, I guess you could say, in that scenario. Now, of course, it's Thursday when he's right. Today's Thursday when you're listening to this podcast, when we release it, that he makes his decision. This came out 10 minutes ago at most, right? Schefter reported it 3 minutes ago. Ian Rappaport reported it about 10 minutes ago. So he's not, right, obviously he's not going to come out and start on Sunday.
No.
That's a pretty obvious thing to take a look at and realize, okay, he's not going to be the starting quarterback on Sunday. But with Sam Darnold now out with the injury, who knows how long he's going to be out. You know, you bring back a guy in Cam Newton that is familiar, maybe not with the offense, because, of course, under Matt Rhule, it's a little bit of a different approach. But the area, some of the people still involved in the organization,
the personnel,
are
yeah.
guys that Cam Newton has been around. It's a little bit more of a comfortability thing. And for Cam Newton, I feel like this sort of solidifies that he made the right decision after being cut by the Patriots, not to rush into something and just try to sign with a team.
To be a backup, yeah.
Right. He took his time, and in doing so, not only does he have an opportunity to come in and be a starter with Sam Darnold being injured, he has the opportunity to come back and be a starter on the team that drafted him and the team that he had all that success with, won an MVP, and went to a Super Bowl with. I think it's a match made in heaven for him to go back to Carolina.
I am really interested to see how Matt Rhule judges this, because like you said, I mean, he's signing, like we said, this podcast is being recorded on Thursday, November the 11th. By the way, happy Veterans Day, if you can even say that, happy Veterans Day. But anyway, that's besides the point. Very, very, very unlikely that Cam Newton starts on Sunday, even though Sam Darnold is injured. He still has to get accustomed to the playbook, reaccustomed, you could say, with the personnel. I know he's looking forward to being back with his old running mate, Christian McCaffrey. And, of course, you know him and McCaffrey were just two of the best players probably ever in Carolina Panthers history. So there's going to be some time there. But I really do think that Carolina, do you think they get better with this signing? I'm not sure. Carolina, you know, I think the jury is still somewhat out on Carolina. We know their defense is good, but their offense has been really hit or miss, I feel like, in my opinion. Like, they had the great start to the season, and now they've just kind of been meh these past 3 or 4 weeks. Sam Darnold has not been as expected. I mean, he was performing pretty well to start the season. Now he's injured. Christian McCaffrey, we all know he is made of glass. Whenever he's on the field, he's one of the best players in all the NFL. Matter is, he can't stay on the field. So, do you think this move makes the Panthers any better than what they were?
In my opinion, yes. If anything else, first and foremost, the fact that right now it looks like P.J. Walker is going to be the starting quarterback for the Carolina Panthers, with Sam Darnold being out at least 4 to 6 weeks with that fracture, you have a guy in P.J. Walker who, I believe, got signed by the Panthers from the CFL, or maybe even the XFL, I believe. He was playing in the XFL.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the Houston Roughnecks of the XFL in 2020, and was having a lot of success. He was leading the league in yards and touchdowns before, of course, the league folded because of COVID. But he's a guy that, if you look at his career stats, he's got his 2020 stats with Houston in the XFL, where he had a 5-0 record. He threw for 1,300 yards, 15 touchdowns, 4 picks, but played in 3 games last year for Carolina. Started in one game that they actually won, but he completed 57% of his passes for 368 yards, 1 touchdown, and 5 picks.
Yee.
So this is a guy in P.J. Walker who could be a big upside guy, 26 years old, but he's from Temple. Up until last season, the guy had never played a snap in the NFL. And then you look and you've got a guy like Cam Newton, who is Cam Newton the same guy that he was during his first stint in Carolina? Obviously not. Okay, nobody's going to argue with you on that point. Cam Newton is not the same player that he was when, you know, he won the national championship and his Heisman Trophy and won that MVP in 2015 or won Rookie of the Year in 2011. Right? He's not the Pro Bowl caliber guy that we saw during his first tenure in Carolina, especially those early years, 2011 to 2015, 2016 were his best years. But he's still a guy that can be a quarterback and has proven that he can be a quarterback at the NFL level, whether that's throwing the ball or running with his legs. I mean, last season, he had 8 touchdowns passing and 10 interceptions, which isn't great, obviously. Now, I'm not going to argue with you on that point at all, but he completed 66% of his passes for 2,600 yards. He also ran for 600 yards and another 12 touchdowns on the ground. So you take a look at that and you think, okay, 20 touchdowns to 10 interceptions.
Meh. Just meh.
You know, I guess you could say 11 total turnovers because he had one lost fumble. He's not the same guy that he once was. There's no doubt about that. But he's still a guy that has proven himself to be a quarterback, and I, in my opinion, one of the 32 best quarterbacks in this league with what he's able to do. And so I feel like it does make them a little bit better. Why not take a shot on something like that?
You got nothing to lose.
Yeah, you don't have anything to lose. It's not going to hurt you to give this a shot. And, you know, is it likely that he gets back to the level that we saw in 2015? No, very, very unlikely that that happens. But if you have that opportunity where he can come back and, you know, throws for 35 touchdowns and only 10 picks and runs for another 10, why not give it a shot? Let's just see what happens.
Yeah, and, you know, the Panthers aren't out of the playoff chase. They're only 4-5. I know that's a losing record through 10 weeks. The top team in the NFC South is obviously the Bucs at 6-2. But there's not that much separation between the second and fourth place teams. New Orleans is 5-3, the Falcons are 4-4, and the Panthers are 4-5. Now, am I saying that the Panthers are a playoff team with Cam Newton? No. Absolutely not. But you could say, you know, it gets them a little bit closer to playoff contention. I don't think they'll make the playoffs with Cam Newton unless, like you said, he turns the clock back 5 years, actually more or less 10 years, and just balls out like he did whenever he was with Ron Rivera and those Panthers teams that made it to the Super Bowl. So, like you said, I, in total agreement, really got nothing to lose, and you know what you're getting out of Cam Newton compared to a XFL star in P.J. Walker, who has been, you know, like you said, just kind of a lot of upside, but hasn't really shown it for the Panthers. So,
right, just a guy, I mean, he's in his second year playing in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, and he was with the Colts for 2 years, via the practice squad from 2017 to 2019. So, you know, you take a look and you have that at least, but that's still not the same as playing this game at the highest level in the NFL, and that's something Cam Newton has done for a decade.
Indeed. Speaking of the NFL, we kind of alluded to before we broke that news, Week 10 is upon us. It will start off tonight in Miami as the Ravens will play the Dolphins. Obviously, Ravens are expected to be the more better team, but we're still going to make our picks here. And, you know, I'll start off simply because it's just the randomness of a Thursday night football game. You know, you never know what you're going to get. Kind of like Forrest Gump in a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. I'm going to go with the Dolphins.
Whoa.
Yeah. Both teams are coming off of short weeks, and I feel like playing on Thursday nights, for whatever reason, more times than not, just kind of levels the playing field. For whatever reason, there's games that are close that shouldn't be when you play on Thursday night because teams have short weeks. And, you know, if these two teams were playing on Sunday or even Monday, I would 100% pick the Ravens and not think twice about it. But considering the fact that it's a Thursday night game, it's in Miami, both teams coming off of short weeks. The Dolphins' defense is still very, very good, despite the fact that their offense is anemic at times. I'm going to go with Miami. Screw it. Why not? Be like Russell Westbrook in his slogan, why not? By the way, he had a triple-double last night. And the Lakers won somehow.
Russell Westbrook had a triple-double? I'm shocked.
He also had a quadruple.
Can you hear it in my voice how shocked I am?
He almost had a quadruple-double as well, had 8 turnovers as well, but, you know. They won the game, so it doesn't matter, but that's besides the point.
It is what it is.
Yeah, that is what it is.
Without LeBron,
yeah,
they won the game. So, Russell Westbrook doing his job right now.
Thank God.
No, I'm sorry, Mr. Frizzell, but you're wrong. The Ravens are going to win this game by multiple scores. All Ravens, all Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson throws for 250 and 2 scores and runs for another 80 and a score.
Not much else to say other than that, huh?
I mean, this is just going to be complete and utter domination.
A Texas beatdown, you think so? Yeah.
In
Florida, yeah.
In my eyes. It's in Miami, but let's not sit here and act like there's a real home field advantage.
I know.
In Miami, all right?
And like I said, it's just because it's a Thursday night game where I just throw any kind of advantages or whatever out the window. Because
right.
Both teams are coming off of short weeks, you know.
Tua's questionable, so it looks like they're going to be running with Jacoby Brissett, who's thrown for 5 touchdowns this season and 4 picks. Lamar Jackson is the leading passer and leading rusher for both of these teams coming into this game. He's got over 2,200 passing yards, 13 touchdowns. He also has 600 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. Hollywood Brown is having a breakout year in my eyes with the way he's been able to perform, especially down in the red zone catching touchdown passes. He's got 6 passing receiving touchdowns so far this season, which is a career high for him. And there are injuries on both sides of this team. You know, taking a look, Sammy Watkins is questionable. Brandon Williams is questionable. Latavius Murray and Patrick McCarry for the Ravens. All those guys questionable and or doubtful for the game. But the same can be said for the Dolphins. Elijah Campbell is questionable. Of course, Will Fuller is on the IR. Tua is questionable. Greg Mantz, the starting guard for the Dolphins, is on the injured reserve list. So there's injuries on both sides of these. They have the Ravens as 7.5-point favorites. I would hammer that. I would take the Ravens at maybe 9
Ravens
or 10.
Ravens to cover, yeah.
Yeah, Ravens to cover at maybe 9 or 10.
Fair enough.
I mean, this is a Ravens team that is, or a Dolphins team, excuse me, that's rushing for 75 yards a game on the season. 75 yards. And a Ravens defense that's only allowing 91. The rushing attack is going to be non-existent for this Dolphins team, which is going to put all that pressure on Jacoby Brissett, the de facto backup quarterback for this Dolphins team, to try to will them to a victory against a perennial MVP in Lamar Jackson and one of the best defenses in the NFL in the Baltimore Ravens defense. I just don't see it happening.
Moving on over down to the Saints at Titans. You know, the Titans had a very, very nice win against Los Angeles, but I think now is the time to where the Titans lose a game that they shouldn't, and I think that's going to happen this week. I'm going to take the Saints in Nashville, Tennessee. I'm feeling dangerous this week.
You are feeling dangerous this week. I'm interested to see exactly what the Saints go with here. You know, Saints in their quarterback situation right now, of course, Jameis is out for the season. Is it going to be Taysom Hill? Is Taysom Hill going to be the guy to come in and replace him? You know, Taysom Hill's had injury issues. He's had COVID issues as well. So is it going to be Taysom Hill, which in my eyes, if he's healthy, I would think they would. But, you know, this is an interesting thing. For the third straight season, the Saints are having to start a backup quarterback for multiple games. For the third straight year. And last year, or 2 years ago, so 2019 and 2020, they went a combined 8-1 in games where they started a backup quarterback. It's kind of nuts. So, you know, you look at that and you think, maybe they got a shot. But I just don't, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. And depending on who you do bring in to be the starting quarterback, if it is Taysom Hill, which in my eyes, if he's healthy, I think he should be the guy. This ability to run the football too, and all the things you can do with him, it makes you a little bit less predictable offensively.
Yeah.
But Michael Thomas is done. He's not coming back.
Sure.
This season at all. In 2021. It's already been announced.
Mm-hmm.
So
poor slant boy.
Poor slant boy who has the NFL record for receptions in a season.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy's talented, without a doubt.
I know, but I just love looking at those memes on Twitter.
He missed most of, if not all of the year last year, if I'm remembering correctly, and he's missing all of this season as well. So you're already down a number one receiver. You're down your starting quarterback. Your franchise quarterback retired at the beginning of the season, or after last season.
Before the season started, yeah.
I don't know. I just don't see, there's too much up in the air for me in New Orleans to make a decision to pick them in this one. I like Nashville at home.
Okay.
The Titans.
It's not the Nashville Titans.
I know,
Tennessee.
It's Tennessee Titans, but they're in Nashville.
I know. They're representing the state, not the country.
Nissan.
The city. Sheesh. Buffalo Bills at the New York Jets. J-E-T-S, Jets, Jets. It's going to be the Bills. Come on. I know the Bills and Sean McDermott, Josh Allen, They got embarrassed. And I know they only lost by three, but you can't lose by three even on the road to Jacksonville. I think they're going to refocus up. They're going to just beat the brakes off of, I about to New Jersey. They play New Jersey, but they're going to beat the brakes off of the New York Jets. Without a doubt, Bills get the W in New York or New Jersey, wherever the hell MetLife
Stadium
is.
Yeah, and, you know, I agree with you. I think the Bills over the Jets, but I am intrigued a little bit by this game. As you mentioned, the Bills laying an egg to the Jaguars last week, and the sort of surge of energy that Mike White has brought into that Jets locker room and that organization with what he's been able to do as a guy that nobody had really heard of up until a couple of weeks ago when he just was out there slinging dots.
Against the Bungles of Cincinnati?
Yeah, and I don't know. It's going to be fun to watch, but I agree with you. I think that the Bills beat the Jets.
Lions at the Steelers. You know, I so badly want to pick the Lions. I really do. Because they are probably one of the best winless teams that I've seen in a while. They're 0-8, 0-9, I believe. 0-8, I think, is what their official mark is. They get so snake-bitten by whoever they play or however they lose, you know. And the Steelers have a very, very good tradition of playing down to their opponents, especially at home. And they did not look that awe-inspiring against the Bears, who should have won that game, by the way. But, you know, ref ball at its finest. Coming off a short week for Pittsburgh. I want to pick the Lions, but I just can't. I'm going to go with the Steelers.
Steelers. Yeah.
Not much debate
Steelers,
about that
one. The Steelers' defense versus the Lions' offense is going to be a tough matchup for anybody. I'll take the Steelers.
Yeah, so we both go with the Steelers there. Jaguars at Colts. Another game that really shouldn't be close. I know the Jaguars just came off a big win, being the AFC favorites in the Buffalo Bills. But the Colts are trying to cement their legacy as well, trying to be one of those better teams in the AFC. It's in Indianapolis, so I'm going to go with the Colts here.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm curious when it comes to this matchup, because the Jaguars, as we mentioned, they got a win last week against a very, very good Bills team that nobody really expected to win in that one. They've won two of their last three games. They beat the Dolphins. They beat the Bills. I don't know. I'm kind of intrigued by the idea of maybe rolling the dice a little bit and picking the Colts. Because, you know, the Jaguars defense performed very, very well. Only allowed 6 points against the Bills, which is one of the better offenses in the National Football League.
Right.
And the offense didn't. The Jaguars offense didn't. They did enough. I will say that. They did enough to get a 9-6 win. But the defense really carried in that one. This defense for the Colts, I don't think is as good as the Bills' defense. Whatever. I'll do it. I'll go with the Jaguars.
All right. See, now my dangerousness is infectious.
Yeah, it's wearing off on me.
I know. Indeed it is. So we'll put an M next to the Colts and an L next to the Jaguars. Not for they're going to lose, but that is the first letter of your name, Mr. Logan Weber.
That's me.
That's you. That's so Logan. All right, Bucks at WFT, Washington football team. I'm intrigued by this matchup as well. Washington's defense is good. They're playing at home against Tom Brady and the Buccaneers. I feel dangerous once again, but, you know, I should really use my head more or less than my gut in this one. And even though it's in Washington, I'm going to go with the Bucs here.
Yeah. Tampa Bay all day long in this one. Tom Brady, I don't feel like Tom Brady is getting enough respect in the MVP conversation.
Because we're used to it at this point.
He's thrown for 2,600 yards and 25 touchdowns through 8 games. He's on pace for a 5,000-yard, 50-touchdown season, and nobody's talking about it.
Yeah, because he's the GOAT. We just expect him to do this. Even if he is 47 years old or however old he is.
And I'm not going to sit here and act like there aren't some injury concerns for this Tampa Bay team. Antonio Brown is questionable. Rashard Robinson, Rob Gronkowski, Chris Godwin, Jason Pierre-Paul, all five questionable coming into this game on Sunday. Of course, it is Thursday, so they've got 3 days to get right before this starts. But I don't know. And I am a little bit intrigued. You know, Taylor Heinicke or Tyler. Is it Tyler?
It's Taylor.
Taylor. Okay. I thought I had it right the first time. Taylor Heinicke, he's been fun to watch. Of course, you've got a great receiver in Terry McLaurin for this team. Antonio Gibson and J.D. McKissic and that sort of tube running back approach that the football team runs with. But I still think this Bucs team is just too talented. With what Brady's been able to do, Leonard Fournette running the football, I like the Bucs.
So we both go with the Bucs there. Excuse me. Browns at the Patriots. This one is a very, very intriguing matchup as well in the AFC. The Patriots have looked pretty good. I know their record doesn't state it as much, but, you know, I believe they're only one game behind the Buffalo Bills in the NFC North or NFC East standings. I'd have to double-check that just to be sure. But, dude, the Patriots' defense is for real, and even without Stephon Gilmore, who they got rid of early in the season, and Mac Jones of that offense, it's done enough, dude. It has done enough to win football games. It's the AFC East. The Bills are 5-3, and the Patriots are 5-4. So they're creeping up right there at that top spot. And, you know, you look at the Browns. They just lost Odell Beckham Jr., but Baker Mayfield balled out against the Bengals last Sunday. But keep in mind, that Bengals defense is suspect at best, and the Patriots is one of the best in the league. They're playing in Foxborough. I can't stand Bill Belichick. I can't stand the Patriots as a team, but I'm going to go with New England here.
Yeah, this one, I don't know. I don't know about this one. This is one that I've been looking at all week as sort of a head-scratcher, in a sense. I feel like Mac Jones has done considerably better, I would say, but this Browns team is dealing with a lot right now. Nick Chubb, of course, now out. It was announced yesterday that he's got COVID, so he's out for the game. Kareem Hunt's been hurt. He's been kind of off and on, but he's not on the injury report, so it looks like he might play. But Baker Mayfield, questionable to play on Sunday. I legitimately do not know who the backup quarterback is for the Cleveland Browns. I don't know.
Case Keenum.
Oh, it is Case Keenum. Okay. But there's a lot of injury issues. Actually, I take that back. Kareem Hunt's on the injured reserve.
Yee.
No Kareem Hunt. No Nick Chubb. Jarvis Landry's questionable. You just got rid of Odell Beckham. Dimitric Fulton, who was sort of like that third or fourth string running back for the Browns, also out on Sunday. Jadeveon Clowney is questionable. Baker's questionable. Miles Garrett is questionable. You know what? I agree with you. I'll go Patriots in this matchup with all the injury issues that the Browns are having to deal with at the moment.
So we both picked the Patriots to win at home. Falcons at the Cowboys. You know, I feel like this game would have been the game that the Cowboys would have lost that they shouldn't have. Yet they beat me to the punch and did it last week against the Broncos. Thank you very much, Dallas. Anyway, still triggered about that. But, you know, dating back to last year, Falcons should have won this game. In Dallas, but, you know, they're Atlanta sports franchise. That's not the Braves. They choked it away. Greg Zuerlein hit a game-winning field goal as time expired. I don't think the game will be as close. I think that loss was a wake-up call, similar to how the Bills lost to the Jaguars. I think that's a wake-up call for Dallas. They come out at home, and they beat the ever-living breaks out of the Falcons here. I'm going with them boys.
Agreed. Yeah, Cowboys in this one. All day, with no Calvin Ridley for the Atlanta, right, for the Falcons.
You said Braves, didn't you?
I almost did, because you said something about the Braves earlier, and that sort of just got it locked into my head. With no Calvin Ridley for the Falcons, that throws a wrench in what you want to do offensively if you're the Atlanta Falcons. You've got a guy that has sort of come out of nowhere in Cordero Patterson, but he's sort of like a wide receiver running back combo.
He's a hybrid. Yeah, he's like
he's leading the Falcons in rushing yards with only 278 on the entire season. Seems a little bit strange.
But then again, the Falcons don't have like a number one running back that they can go to.
Right. And Dak was coming back off the injury.
Yeah.
In that game last week, and he did struggle a little bit. He got it sort of to put it together a little bit more in that fourth quarter. I think that that just helps him coming into Sunday. He kind of, you know, shook some of that rust, some of that, you know, anxiety off and got himself ready to go for this game on Sunday against the Falcons. I agree with you, Cowboys.
See, and the Cowboys looked good for like that final 5 minutes or whatever, but, you know, too little too late at that point. We both go Cowboys. Panthers at the Cardinals. We just kind of talked about it, how P.J. Walker will be the starting quarterback for the Panthers. Kyler Murray, I believe, will be back, but DeAndre Hopkins is still questionable. But either way, Cardinals got a very nice win, a very good team depth win against the 49ers last week, and I think they'll continue that here, defeating the Panthers at home.
Yeah, I agree with you. This Cardinals team is proving throughout this entire season that they're a contender. I don't think there's any argument that can be made one way or another about this one, but there are, like you said, some injury issues. Kyler Murray's status still kind of up in the air. They believe he will play, but
never know between now and Sunday.
Yeah. DeAndre Hopkins is questionable. Buda Baker is questionable. So we'll see what happens there, but you didn't have Kyler Murray last week, and you got the win.
Yeah, Texas standout Colt McCoy spearheading that offense.
Right. Spearheading that offense, you could say, and doing a good job, and helping that Cardinals offense score 31 points. He sort of did his job after Kyler went down, but you know Kyler,
yeah,
yeah, still threw for 261 and three touchdowns before he went down. So I think it'll be okay. What happens there? If Kyler Murray's back on Sunday, then I think there's no doubt about it that the Cardinals win this game.
Vikings at Chargers for the next one. I think this one will be the most exciting to watch. I'd say fun to watch. I'm kind of questioning myself in saying that. But, you know, looking at these two teams, there's a lot of talent on this team, or on both these teams for that matter. The game is in Los Angeles, Vikings at the Chargers. Vikings have kind of stumbled here these past couple weeks, but I think... See, now I'm thinking, and that's when I'm most dangerous. Whenever this starts turning, just everything else just kind of is in peril. You know what? I'm going to go with the Vikings here. I know the Chargers have Justin Herbert. They have that electric offense, but the Vikings have offensive weapons themselves. They're playing in Los Angeles, and the Chargers haven't really played that well at home. Nonetheless, you know, when it's SoFi Stadium, it turns into whatever team stadium West or whatever. It's a joke that they can't get any fan support because all their fans are in San Diego, not Los Angeles. Thank you, Dean Spanos. I want to say it, but I'm going to get, you know, bum rushed by the FCC for saying it. But I'm going to go with the Vikings here. They have offensive weapons as well. I think Dalvin Cook runs all over the Chargers' lack of run defense, and the Vikings win in Los Angeles.
Disagree.
Good.
I am big on Justin Herbert.
I am too.
I think the guy's going to be a top 10 quarterback in this league sooner rather than later. And you mentioned that the Chargers haven't been great at home. They're 2-2 at home this season. Well, the Vikings are 1-3 on the road. The Vikings have been even worse on the road than the Chargers have been at home. So in that case, I like the Chargers in this one. Between that and what Justin Herbert's been able to do this season so far, I like the Chargers.
See, I wouldn't mind a total shootout in that game because Herbert is on my fantasy team and Adam Thielen is on my other fantasy team. So we can get Herbert for 400 yards and maybe 4 or 5 touchdowns. And then if Kirk Cousins can throw it to Thielen for like, 120 for 2 tutties, yeah. Double thumbs up for that. So I pick the Vikings, you pick the Chargers. Next one up. And I feel like this would be a good game if both starting quarterbacks do play. It's the Seattle Seahawks at the Green Bay Packers, one of the best rivalries of the top teams this past decade. It's in Green Bay, and I believe Rodgers will be back. He'll be back with the team after sitting out those 10 days for being unvaccinated and him contracting COVID-19. I'm not sure of the status of Russell Wilson. And I still think, even overall, the Packers are a better team than the Seahawks. With Russell Wilson, they're playing in Lambeau. I'm going to go with the Packers here.
Mm. Yeah, everything that I've read or seen and heard from Aaron Rodgers himself sounds like Rodgers is going to go on Sunday. If Rodgers does go on Sunday, the Packers win this game. If he doesn't, however, what we saw last Sunday when the Packers matched up with the Chiefs was Jordan Love just seemed uncomfortable the entire night.
Out of place.
Yeah, it just seemed like he was not in control of the offense in the way that we've seen from Aaron Rodgers in his time there in Green Bay. But it sounds like Rodgers is going to go on Sunday, so I agree with you. I'll take the Packers.
So we both go with the Packers there at Lambeau Field. Now going over to the Eagles at the Broncos. Eagles just coming off a loss against the Chargers. Broncos just coming off a surprising win to the Dallas Cowboys. I think the Eagles are a bunch of frauds, in my opinion.
That's just because you don't like the Eagles.
I don't know, dude. That is partial bias, I guess. But, I mean, there is talent there. But, you know, I was very surprised at the outcome of that Chargers-Eagles game. You know, I believe the line was like 1.5 in favor of the Eagles, and the Chargers won it by 3. It's in Denver. Broncos just came off a very, very nice win against the Cowboys. Teddy Bridgewater looked outstanding. They ran the ball over Dallas' defense. This is tough. I'm feeling dangerous once again, and that's not a good thing, like I said.
Well, I already have my pick, so I'll go ahead.
You're going to go with the Eagles?
No.
You're going to go with the Broncos?
Yeah, I was just giving you a hard time. I'm going with the Broncos in this one. The Broncos, you know, they won their first 3 games of the season against some pretty lower-tiered teams in the Giants, Jaguars, and Jets. 2 of those games on the road, however. And then, you know, they lose 4 straight. They lose to the Ravens. They lose to the Steelers, the Raiders, the Browns. Those are 4 teams that hover around 500, maybe a little bit above 500 in the case of the Ravens. But then you come back, like you just mentioned, beat the Washington football team 17-10 at home. And then they beat the Cowboys 30-16 on the road at AT&T Stadium. This Broncos defense is going to keep them in games. And that's all there is to say about it. And I think the Broncos defense is going to help them win this football game because I believe this Eagles team is more comparable to those Giants, Jaguars, Jets, or Washington football team than maybe the Ravens or the Raiders or the Browns.
Well, I'm glad we're in agreement because I also will pick the Broncos here. I feel like the Broncos are the NFL's version of the Iowa Hawkeyes. They just rely way too much on their defense and their offense is just kind of meh.
I couldn't agree more.
But we both go with the Broncos there. Now we move over to Sunday night football. Kansas City Chiefs against the Las Vegas Raiders. Raiders just got defeated, I should say. They just lost to the New York Giants last week, and the Chiefs just barely etched out a win against the Packers at home. The Aaron Rodgers-less, may I mind you, Packers at home won that game. Overall, I think the Chiefs just have a better personnel than the Raiders, but then again, you think with that personnel, the Chiefs would have a lot better record than what they are right now, 5-4. But I still think with all that's going on with Las Vegas, them losing to the Giants, Henry Ruggs, of course, is now arrested and a felon. And then their defensive back, Damon Arnett, just got released because he took a video with him with a gun and made threats. Freaking idiot. I'm going to go with the Chiefs here. I think this will be a statement win as well for the Chiefs. I think this is where they figure out their offensive woes. They come out and they beat the brakes out of the Raiders in Las Vegas.
Yeah, I don't know if they beat the brakes off of the Raiders necessarily, but this is an opportunity for the Kansas City Chiefs, as you mentioned, with everything going on revolving around the Las Vegas Raiders right now. If they beat the Raiders on Sunday, that will move them into second place in this division, right? It's a very, very tight race right now. The Chargers and the Raiders are each 5-3. The Chiefs and the Broncos are each 5-4. So there is a situation you can look at here, and there is a scenario where if the Chiefs beat the Raiders and the Chargers lose, the Chiefs can leapfrog to first place in this division. along with the depending on what the Broncos do. If the Broncos win, then the Chiefs and Broncos are atop the AFC West at 6-4 apiece. The Chiefs, despite all of the negativity and everything that we've seen this season, at times, you know, a 5-4 mark is not what Chiefs fans expected coming into this season. They can get back on track. You know, there are some things surrounding the Kansas City Chiefs right now that maybe can, I don't want to say they're a distraction, but there are some things that the Chiefs organization and Chiefs fans are maybe looking at rather than focus on this game. Of course, the Odell Beckham thing, which it's been announced that he's not going to make a decision until after the games are played this week, this weekend. Sunday night. So, but this Raiders team is just dealing with so much right now. You know, you're a few weeks removed from the John Gruden situation, and then this Henry Ruggs situation unfolds, and then Damon Arnett, and there's just so much going on off of the field for this Raiders team, and I just don't feel like that's, you know, the Gruden thing and the fact that they were able to overcome that, very impressive thing. But now you throw the Henry Ruggs situation on top of that, the Damon Arnett situation on top of that, it's just a tough thing to deal with. You know, the Raiders have lost three of their last five games. Their two wins were against the Broncos and the Eagles, but they lost to the Giants last week. As you said, they did, I will say, the Raiders did make a big signing in DeSean Jackson this week, but you signed a guy in DeSean Jackson on Monday, Tuesday. Is he going to be ready 5 days from now for a Sunday night football game against the Kansas City Chiefs? I'm just not entirely sure. I agree with you. I'll take the Chiefs in this one.
And then finally, to round out the Week 10 slate, Monday Night Football, a NFC West showdown, LA Rams, San Francisco 49ers. Rams had a tough loss on Sunday Night Football last Sunday against the Tennessee Titans at home, nonetheless. I think the Rams bounce back. I think they get much improved. I feel like the best way to improve as a team is to, you know, lose games you shouldn't and then make adjustments out of those games and improve upon it. And I'm going to go with Los Angeles here against the 49ers. I feel like the Rams overall are just a better team than the 49ers. And the 49ers, man, they've been underperforming, I feel like, in my opinion. And they're going to continue to do that. Rams at 49ers. I'm going to go with LA.
It's tough for me to say that they're underperforming because...
You think they're just a product of a tough division?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. They're a product of a tough division, and they're a product of a ton of injuries, which has been their bread and butter, it seems like, over the last 2 years. I mean, Mike McGlinchey is out on injured reserve. Jimmy Ward's questionable. Maurice Hurst is questionable. You know, Jalen Hurd, Mohamed Sanu, Dee Ford. There's just a lot going on with this team and everybody on injured reserve. Raheem Mostert, Jason Verrett. So many guys on injured reserve or hurt for this 49ers team. It's a lot to have to deal with. The Rams have some injury concerns as well. Right now, Matthew Stafford is questionable with his sprained ankle that he suffered last week against the Titans. Everything I've seen and read sounds like he is going to go. Jacob Harris, they just put him on the injured reserve. Not the starting tight end for this Rams team, but still a guy that could get some targets. Yeah. Von Miller's questionable, but there's just so many more injuries surrounding this Niners team than the Rams, and the Rams have way more talent despite the injuries, then the 49ers, I agree with you. I'll take the Rams.
So there we go. The NFL Week 10 picks are set in stone, locked forever on this Google Doc I have here on my computer off to my right.
There we go. I want to talk about something before we get into Therapy Session Thursday.
Are you going to vent on this Therapy Session Thursday? Is it going to be, are you going to explode your feelings on this topic?
No, I'm not really as upset with my Therapy Session Thursday topic. It's just something that I've noticed that just kind of, you know, kind of has got me a little bit bamboozled. Hoodwinked, bamboozled,
led
run
astray.
Amok. Yeah, Stephen A. it's got me confused. But before we get into that, I want to go over, because it is something that you and I are both involved in this coming Friday, but something that has been a primary job of mine here at the studio in this fall season, high school football. And we've got district championship week upcoming tomorrow night.
Yep.
And we've got some great ones. Taking a look, Class 1, District 3, We've got the one seed Marionville taking on second seeded Thayer.
Was going to do that game, but because of, you know, press box facilities, I mean, it is a Class 1 school. It just wasn't going to happen. So, but yeah, still a very, very good matchup between two Class 1 schools, like you said, in District 3, Thayer and Marionville.
In Class 1, District 4, and these are only, I'm only going through the districts that involve schools in the Ozarks, in Southwest Missouri.
In the Southwest Missouri area, not
if I were to go through
south.
All eight districts.
Oh, we'd be here for another
hour. In Classes
hour.
1 through 5 and the four districts in classes in Class 6, we'd be here all day. And then, you know, throw in 8-man or whatever, which I don't do 8-man because I don't think there's very few, if any, 8-man schools involved.
Yeah.
In down here, it's more of a 8-man is definitely more a Northwest Missouri thing, where I grew up, where I'm from. 8-man is a 8-man's a pretty popular thing.
Does Lawson still do 8-man or are they 11-man?
No, we're 11.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, oh yeah, without a doubt, 11-man. Class 2, the Lawson Cardinals. Moving to Class 1, District 4, we've got the one seed in Skyline. I had the opportunity to do a game at Skyline in Urbana.
Week 1, right?
Week 1, first game of the year. They're taking on Windsor, the two seed within that district. And then we move to Class 2. In Class 2, District 3, it's going to be Ava against Liberty Mountain View. Ava's the one seed. Liberty Mountain View is the three seed. But this is a matchup between two teams that did play each other in the regular season. Ava won that one 59-24
Jeez.
During the regular season. So coming into it, it looks like Ava will be the favorite. In Class 2, District 4, we've got the one seed Lamar taking on second-seeded Fairgrove. That's where I will be tomorrow night. I will be at Lamar High School calling that broadcast here on ESPN The Jock 96.9, 99.9, and AM 1060. A matchup that could be considered by most, myself included, as sort of the de facto state championship in Class 2. Both of these teams are undefeated, currently ranked the number one and number two teams in Class 2 coming into that matchup tomorrow night. Moving into Class 3, District 6, it's the 4 seed in Seneca taking on 3rd seeded Mountain Grove. In that one there, both teams got upset wins in last week's matchup, defeating the 1 seed and the 2 seed within that district. In Class 4, District 6, it's West Plains taking on McDonald County.
The Zizzers.
The Zizzers taking on McDonald County. I believe the McDonald County Tigers is what I want to say. I had the opportunity... Another team that I had a chance to call a game of theirs earlier this year when they took on a when they took on a Springfield Catholic team here the Fighting Irish here in the here in Springfield. They're the Mustangs, McDonald County Mustangs. That's Class 4 District 6 district title game there. In Class 4 District 7, it is the Lincoln College Prep. The one seed taking on second-seeded Nevada. Should be a good matchup there. Nevada is
Nevada
team.
Here in Missouri, not Nevada like the state.
True.
Nevada.
Nevada. It's weirdly pronounced. Like one of the things that bugs me more than anything is in southeast Missouri, it's they pronounce it Versailles.
Instead of Versailles?
Versailles, like the French pronounce it.
Yeah.
Bugs me to no end.
You know what bugs me? When people call Missouri, Missouri.
You should talk to the legendary Art Haynes
I know. He says that, and, you know, I still love him for it. But it
Which
ends
is
with
weird because he's a Kansas City area guy.
That's right. Exactly. It ends with an I. Missouri. Not Missouri.
Like, literally, like, the only time I ever heard people pronounce it Missouri was people that lived, like, in the southern part of this.
Down here.
The southern part of Missouri, and the further south you went, it was Missouri. Bugs me to no end. The only thing that makes me more upset than people pronouncing Missouri, Missouri, is when people pronounce Iowa, Iowa. I swear
to God. Who the
hell
pronounces
Iowa?
I
don't know. Psychopaths, sociopaths, I don't know. People that just want to get under, people that wake up and choose violence is how I would describe it. But I have had people pronounce it Iowa to my face before.
Because it ends with the letter A. But it's Iowa.
I don't know, man.
Different pronunciation of A, different infliction of the A. Just like it's Missouri, not Missouri.
It's got me flustered. I don't know. Class 5, District 5, your matchup, Mr. Frizzell. The one seed, Lebanon, taking on second seeded Glendale. A rematch of what I would say was the best high school football game that we had the opportunity to call here on the Jock or our sister station, KWTO, this season. A 31-28 win for Lebanon on a game-winning, as time expired, field goal that led to some extracurriculars after the fact, but it was a phenomenal football game throughout all four quarters. It was so close, and as I mentioned, as time expired, a game winner for Lebanon that put them over the top 31-28, and for not back-to-back years, not for 3 years in a row, not for 4 years in a row, but for the fifth straight season, it's Lebanon Glendale in Class 5 District 5 championship game.
I'm looking forward to it, and it'll be on our sister station, KWTO AM 560. And it's such an intriguing matchup, not just because of the records and like what you said, Logan, it's now their fifth straight year being in district titles, but the two offenses, the two teams in total, are polar opposites of each other. Glendale, five wide. West Coast, throw the ball all over the yard, air show. Lebanon, 4 yards in a cloud of dust. I formation, split back eye. Wishbone, veer. They run the ball, control possession. Believe me, I have seen a lot of Lebanon football in my years covering the Ozark Tigers and the Willard Tigers, because more times than not, Lebanon is in those same districts with those two teams, but that's beside the point. I have seen both of these offenses in full, and if it's turning out the way it is, like you said in your previous matchup, it's going to be a fantastic game that's now going to be in Lebanon, Missouri. Of course, that matchup you had was in Glendale, Missouri. Or Glendale, Missouri.
Was in
Springfield,
Glendale.
Missouri.
Yep.
Yeah, at Glendale High School. So I'm really, really looking forward to that. Me and Bob Klinkenbeard will have the call there on AM 560. KWTO. Keep watching the Ozark. And hey, keep listening to that game because it's going to be a good one.
It is. Moving to Class 5, District 6. Another matchup of a regular season game. Carthage taking on Webb City. This Carthage team has been dominant.
Yes.
All year long. Had the opportunity a couple of weeks ago in the regular season finale. Carthage took on Nixa at Nixa. Had the opportunity to call that game. Thought it was going to be a great one going in. A very talented Nixa team, a very talented Carthage team. Carthage just dominated. I mean, Carthage has won by at least double figures in every single game they've played this season. Their closest matchup this year was a 34-22 win against Joplin on the road. A Joplin team that has now headed into a district championship matchup themselves, but just a complete and utter domination. Their next closest matchup was a 35-14 win over Republic, and then it was 42-14 wins over Webb City and Branson. And I guess a 28-0 win over Carl Junction. But they beat Ozark 49-14. They beat Neosho 71-14. Beat Willard 42-7. Beat Nixa 49-14. I mean, just blowing teams out.
And you talk about their scores. Yeah, you know, you're talking about 35, 42, 49 points. The reason why they're going to win this game and perhaps win the district championship if they do get, or district championship, state championship, if they do get by Webb City, is because of that defense you talked about.
Great defense.
You talk about, you score 35, 42, 49, even 71, like you said to Neosho. The most points they've given up has been those 22 points against Joplin. And then next to that was the Willard versus Carthage semifinal in districts in which they gave up 20. And the 20 points were scored by Willard in garbage time in the second half.
Yeah. Carthage this season is averaging 43.4 points per game and allowing only 13.3.
And that's the reason why I feel like they're the best team in Southwest Missouri. Disregard the classes, I feel like they're going to be the best team. But hey, Webb City has a track record now, and this is the second meeting against each other. You know, what adjustments have, you know, John Roderick and those Webb City Cardinals have made? You know, what adjustments are they going to make? But overall, pound for pound, team for team, Carthage is the best team in Southwest Missouri, and especially in Class 5, and I expect them to win the district championship.
Yeah, certainly. And a matchup, again, at home for Carthage. They beat Webb City at home earlier in the year, and now they get to play them at home again. But as the saying goes, it's hard to beat a team twice.
Indeed, especially in football, yeah.
Final matchup we've got, Class 6, District 3. It's going to be the second seed in Joplin taking on the top seed and one of the best teams in Class 6 in Lee Summit North. And this is a matchup between two teams that have a lot of talent, but this Lee Summit North team has Division I talent up and down the board.
Yes, and you know, at least Summit North, a Kansas City area school. Haven't seen them play, but I have seen Joplin play. If Joplin can get their pace up like they usually do, I know you saw the Joplin-Nixa game. If they can keep up their high-tempo, no-huddle offense, I feel like that's when they're at their best. But when you're facing a team that's talented as Lee Summit North, you kind of think, you think our best defense would just be our offense? Just, you know, keeping our offense out there on the field and keeping their offense in, on the sideline? You know, I'm interested to see the game plan for Coach Curtis Jasper and the Joplin Eagles for this district title game coming up tomorrow. It should be a good one. I know, like you said, Lee Summit North is one of, if not the best teams in Class 6. And Joplin, not far behind them. Their only loss was to Carthage. So, I'm very interested to see how this game plans out. I'm very interested in following that game whenever I'll be doing my Lebanon Glendale game.
Yeah, but, I mean, just you take a look at it, and you find this Lee Summit North team, and they've got, you know, kids that are going to Mizzou and Navy, kids that are, you know, it sounds like going to Oklahoma. They've got at least half a dozen Division I caliber players on this team, multiple players having already signed Division I letter of intents with Power 5 programs. That's a tall task for anybody to have to deal with. And for this Joplin team with all the stuff that's going on off the field with them and that situation with the
benching of Always Right for, you know,
for a
discipline
week and,
reasons.
Yeah. But he played last week, but you've still got that looming situation there. I don't know how much of a factor that's going to play, but you've got to bring your A game against a team like this Lee Summit North Club. And I'm just not 100% confident that they're going to be able to get the win.
See, Lee Summit North, record of 10-1. Joplin is also 10-1. In their district semifinal game, they played Raymore Peculiar. And in the regular season, Raymore Peculiar got the brakes beaten off them. They lost 41-14. Raymore Peculiar did. But in the district semifinal, it was only a 21-14 final. So maybe there's some injury problems there, some
well, and that's a
rest, like, you know.
It's a Ray Peck team that's very, very talented, right. First and foremost. This is a Ray Peck team that won the state championship in Class 6 a season ago. So obviously they lost some guys, but still, they finished the year 8-3, so that's nothing to shake your head at. The only loss this Lee Summit North team has had this season was a 35-38 win loss to Liberty North, who is, as far as I've seen, the number one ranked team in Class 6. And aside from that, it's been pretty much domination. Aside from a 28-27 overtime win against Blue Valley North, they've controlled a lot of these matchups. They beat Lee Summit West by 30. They beat Park Hill by almost 40. Beat Blue Springs by 35. Like you said, that regular season matchup against Ray Peck, they won by 27. Beat Liberty by 21. Beat Lee Summit by 36. I mean, just pure domination from this Lee Summit North team, aside from just a few outliers that lost to a great Liberty North team and that overtime winning against Blue Valley North.
High school football, love watching it and love seeing it play out here in the closing, actually not even closing, the middle weeks, the middle days of November. All right, I know we have only about 50 more minutes left here in the podcast, but we still have enough time for therapy session Thursday. And you know, Logan, surprisingly enough, there hasn't been really anything recently that I've been upset about.
Well, that's good.
But I want to just kind of get this out into the air. And therapy session Thursday, we've all said, we don't have to get mad, even though it's mostly the premises of this segment. We don't have to get mad. We don't have to get upset. We can just kind of vent out thoughts that are just in our head that we want to get out into the open world. So I was thinking about this last night while watching a docu-series on World War II called World War II in Colors. It's a 10-part series, or 10-episode series, I should say. Excuse me. And I had just finished watching the Pearl Harbor episode, all the events that led up to it, how it could have been avoided, you know, that kind of stuff. And I was just thinking to myself, what if, and this is coming off the prefaces that Call of Duty Vanguard has just been released. It's a World War II-based game.
Great game.
It is a great game. I enjoyed the campaign, not so much the multiplayer, but then again, I'm new at it. What if Call of Duty made a game, and they haven't done this yet to my knowledge, if they made a World War II-based game that was specifically set in the Pacific Theater. They've done multiple games where it's been in the Eastern Front, where they've been to Germany. There's also, of course, Call of Duty World at War. You kind of had it both ways, you know. You had one side, you were the Russians fighting the Germans in the East, and then you were the Americans fighting the Japanese in the West. Then, of course, you had Call of Duty World War II, in which you were just solely the Americans fighting out in the German areas, in Eastern Europe, or just in Europe in general, out on the East Front. There have been, even going back to the PlayStation 3 and 2 days, you know, Call of Duty Finest Hour, Call of Duty 2, Big Red One, Call of Duty 3. You were fighting, you know, out East in Europe. What if they made a game where you start out in the Pacific Front, you start out as an American soldier, obviously, at, say, Pearl Harbor or the Philippines or however you want to start it. You start there, and you continuously, as the war goes on, just kind of follow historic events like the island hopping that the United States did in World War II, and you end the campaign, you know, obviously doing battles at Midway, Coral Sea, the Philippines, Guadalcanal, Iwo Jima, Okinawa. What if you just went through the entire Western Front of World War II, and it ended as you as a pilot dropping, you know, the infamous atomic bombs? I think that'd be a great game, in my opinion. It's just something that Call of Duty and their studios have yet to do yet. And I know, I feel like their bread and butter for Call of Duty is World War II games. It's their most selling games, I feel like. I think it'd just be a multi-billion dollar investment if you could make a World War II game that was based in the Western Front of fighting. You know, you start at Pearl Harbor, you go throughout the historic main events of that game, of the historic battles of World War II in that Western Front, and you end it how the war ended in Japan with the dropping of the atomic bombs. But, you know, that's my third position Thursday. I feel like I needed to get that idea off my chest. What do you think about it?
Yeah, I don't. I think for me, the thing that I wish that Call of Duty would do, and they've done it a few times, you know, I love the idea, and maybe I'm alone in this. I love the idea of remastering old games. You know, I've got a PS2. I've got an Xbox 360. So I have every Call of Duty that has ever been released on console. I've got Call of Duty Classic. I've got Call of Duty Finest Hour. Call of Duty 2. Call of Duty 2 Big Red 1. Call of Duty 3 World at War, all the way up to now Vanguard. The only two that I do not have and have never played is Infinite Warfare and Advanced Warfare. Never played those. They look like garbage. I've heard they are garbage.
The campaigns are good in them, but the multiplayer and that, yeah, no.
Didn't play them, never have played them. I wish that they would do that. You know, I've seen some companies that, and Call of Duty themselves have done it. They did a Call of Duty remastered. They Call of Duty or Modern Warfare remastered. They did Modern Warfare 2 remastered. Why not continue to do that?
I'm in favor of that as well.
Go back and, you know, I'm waiting for them to remaster the original Black Ops. I want that so bad. It's my favorite Call of Duty game ever. Ever. Love that game. I wish they would remaster that. I wish they would go back and they would remaster Call of Duty Classic or Call of Duty Finest Hour and Call of Duty 2 Big Red 1, Call of Duty 3. You know, go back and remaster the old games and bring some of that nostalgia back, you know?
Yeah.
Because I still play them. I just finished replaying the campaign on Call of Duty Finest Hour.
There you go.
On my PS2. Difficult. Let me just say that. Difficult to accomplish. Because we're so used to the graphics of today now. You know, of course, back in 2004, when Call of Duty Finest Hour first came out, because that was the first Call of Duty that actually was released on a console.
We thought it was groundbreaking.
Yeah, Call of Duty, the original Call of Duty, was a PC game.
That I played, yeah.
Right, and now it's Call of Duty Classic, which you can get for Xbox 360. But it was groundbreaking. It was so much fun to be able to, you know, you cross the bridge, right, and go across the Rhine. You capture the bridge, you're... You're fighting as a member of the British in North Africa. You're fighting as a Russian in the European Theater of Operations. You're in the Battle of Stalingrad. You know, stuff like that. So cool to be a part of. You're an American fighting through France. It's so cool to be a part of that sort of stuff. I wish they would do that. You know, and like EA Sports, they're not releasing any more Medal of Honor games. Why not remaster the old Medal of Honor games? Remaster Medal of Honor Vanguard, Medal of Honor European Assault, yeah. Rising Sun. You know, why not remaster those games? I wish they would do stuff like that. TV does it all the time. Movies do it all the time. They just make a newer version of an old product.
It get them a lot of money, especially for that nostalgia factor.
And if you don't, and here's the thing. If you don't want to release it as its own game, then why not do what which was it Advanced Warfare? That they released Advanced Warfare.
Infinite Warfare.
Infinite Warfare. You release that, and if you bought it, you also got Modern Warfare remastered.
Yeah.
Keep doing that.
I'm in total favor of that.
I wish that they would do that more. I really wish, because I'm a huge fan of Red Dead Redemption, I wish that Rockstar Games would remaster the original Red Dead. Red Dead Redemption 1, or even Red Dead Revolver, which was the precursor to Red Dead Redemption, which that was a PS2 game. You know, there's a lot of that. Did you ever play like the Brothers in Arms games?
Oh, yeah. Wow, you just unlocked a memory I forgot I had. Yeah. Gosh, I'm trying to think of the precipice of those games.
So, they're so good. And they all, like, intertwine with one another. They're all around the same group.
I gotta look
and
that
so
up.
And so there's, here. Like, the first one, I think, was, like, Red Dead Redemption, or Brothers in Arms, Road to Hill 30, and then it was Brothers in Arms, Earned in Blood, and then the PS3 game was Brothers in Arms, Hell's Highway, which was maybe my favorite military game I've ever played in my life was that game. And there's been rumors that they're going to make another one, but they haven't yet. And, I mean, they literally haven't released a console version for Brothers in Arms since like 2008, 2009.
I feel like I've played these games, but sadly, I think I forgot about them. I need to go back and buy them.
I've got them.
Are they like, say, looking at the time frame, it looks like they're just PS2 and PS3 games.
Yeah, they are.
Brothers in Arms, Furious 4, Brothers in Arms, Road to Hill 30, like you just said, Earned in Blood, D-Day. Oh, man.
So as of September of this year, they have said that there is another Brothers in Arms game currently in the process of being made. So
there you go.
But yeah, I mean, they've continued to release like iPhone games, right? But, like, nothing on a console yet, which is really depressing.
Indeed. All right, I know we got about 6 minutes left here. You got anything else you want to add for your therapy session Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, just really quickly, something that I've noticed over the past few weeks and something that I feel like has got me a little bit flustered in a way. Why is it that my college football fandom, that team, has a subpar offense but a great defense? But my NFL fandom is a great offense, but a bad defense.
That's tough.
It's like I can't. Neither one of them can find any consistency. Now the Chiefs' defense has been much better in the last couple of weeks, but like the Iowa offense is towards the bottom of the entire league in Division I in offense, but like a top 10 defense. On the flip side of that, the Chiefs have a top 10 offense, but a bottom 10 defense. It's like, please, can we just, like, take the Chiefs offense
and take it
and
to
the
Iowa,
Iowa defense and just, like, mesh those together and then put them on both teams? Now, I will say, and there's going to be some people that are upset with me, if I had to pick one, I'm taking the Chiefs offense and trading that with the Iowa offense because I want my Hawkeyes to be really, really good.
Well,
yeah. The Chiefs I love. I love the Chiefs.
The only reason the Hawkeyes aren't a top 10 team, hell, a top 5 team, is because their offense is anemic.
Yeah. Because we scored 14 combined points in 2 weeks and lost both of those games.
Yeah. Petrus is not your guy, and the offensive coordinator, Gary Pinkel,
Brian Ferentz.
Brian Ferentz, thank you. I was going to say Corey Ferentz. His son is the offensive coordinator.
Kirk Ferentz, yeah, our head coach. His son's the offensive coordinator.
And that is...
But did you watch the game on Saturday?
I did not. I was doing other events. I'd
Petras got benched.
There you go.
They threw in the backup, Alex Padilla from Colorado.
How'd he do?
And he did all right. He just sort of gave the... I mean, we still only scored 17 points, but he was 18 of 28 for 172 yards. He did his job. Didn't throw a pick.
This was against Northwestern, correct?
Yeah, didn't force anything, and it opened up the running game, which was nice. For the first time all year, Iowa ran the ball basically whenever they wanted to. You know, Tyler Goodson had 145 yards rushing and a touchdown, averaged 6.7 yards a carry. Gavin Williams, the backup running back, had 10 carries for 41 yards. Iowa ran for 202 yards on the day on 38 carries, which is an average of 4.9 yards a carry.
Very good.
It's exactly what you're looking for.
5 yards in a cloud of dust. And it is Northwestern, and their football team's just been kind of meh these past few years.
Yeah, they're very well, they won the Big Ten West last year. They're just, it's one of those things. They're sort of similar to Iowa in that way, where they'll have a year or two where they're a little bit down, maybe not as down as they are this season, but you know, they're Iowa's one of those programs, you know, 7-5, 8-4, 9-3, 7-5, 8-4, and then it's like, bam, they have a 10-2, 11-1, or a 12-0 season, and you're like, where the hell did that come from?
Yeah.
It's just sort of how it is with some of these programs. You know, it's a developmental program. They don't bring in 4 and 5 stars every year, and so sometimes the stars just align with a program like that, and that's sort of the way Northwestern is. They're 8-4, 7-5, 8-4, 7-5, and then they're 10-2, they win the West, and they're in the Big Ten title game. That's just sort of how it plays out sometimes.
Yep. And this episode of the Rookie Sports Report podcast has played out to its fullest extent. We're just now getting to the 111 mark, closing on the 112 mark. I know you got to go here. Always appreciate it. We talked NFL picks, talked college football, talked some high school football as well. And then, of course, we had Third Possession Thursday. Logan, always a pleasure, and God willing, we'll do it on Monday.
Yeah, we will.
Indeed, we will. Folks, that'll do it here for the Thursday edition of the Rookie Sports Report Podcast. Matthew Rizzall alongside
Logan Weber.
Folks, don't let anyone tell you the odds, and we'll talk to you on Monday.
I have nothing to say today.